This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Strengthen our safe storage laws so that children cannot get access to guns, cannot commit suicide. 85% of youth suicides are committed with a family member, usually a parent's gun. Those are the same guns on our streets and gangs, same guns coming in our schools.
And the impact of still of the NRA, obviously, and the lobbying of our politicians on this issue?
Are you talking about the opposition's ability to stop this legislation?
Right.
And in that case, yes. The NRA is very strong. And what I think is that we have to remember is that that's a lot of propaganda. In North Carolina, we have 51% gun ownership. We work every day with retired police officers, with hunters, with sports shooters, with gun owners who believe in the right to carry weapons as we do, but also believe in sensible legislation that can protect our communities. However, when the only message reaching them is a message of fear, it's a message of you'll lose your right to carry a weapon, then that mass public support for sensible gun legislation gets silenced.
We are coming up on the anniversary of Columbine.
I'm sure you saw that one of the fathers who lost his child at Columbine is fighting very hard right now in Maine to close the gun show loophole, and that the gun show loophole itself, had it been closed, could have prevented Columbine. And these boys were able to have a friend purchase shotguns for them at a gun show from private sellers. And if that was not there, who knows what could have happened if we could have prevented this.
Well, Roxanne Kohler, I want to thank you very much for being with us, joining us here in North Carolina as we continue our tour around the country. Community media, community voices. That does it for a broadcast. We now fly out to Athens, Ohio. I'll be speaking today at 5 o'clock at the Scripps College of Journalism, Templeton Blackburn Memorial Auditorium in Athens at Ohio University. Tomorrow, April 10th, in Columbus, Ohio at noon at the First Unitarian Universalist Church. I'll be then headed to Cleveland tomorrow night, and then we head on to Portland, Oregon. You can check our website, democracynow.org. Also be speaking at Kent State. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. Mike Burke and Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anjali Kamat, and Nicole Salazar, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Robbie Caron. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of the New Capital Show. Getting a little bit of a late start today, so we're going to get with it quickly. www.newcapitalshow.com is our address. Those of you who live in Houston this weekend, Earth Day Houston, citywide festival. New Capital Show has been very involved in planning this. I've personally been involved in working with the great people at Mothers for Clean Air, at the Galveston Houston Association for Smog Prevention, GASP, many, many organizations involved. This is, folks, the kind of festival that you want to come out to. It's nonprofit. It is, there's no main title sponsor of it. It's Discovery Green in downtown Houston from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And this particular event, celebrating the Earth, educating about different aspects of the earth, land, air, water, alternative energy. This is a credit to our city. I hope that all of you will be able to come on out, and I'll be there, so make sure you stop by and say hello. This weekend, that is on Saturday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., downtown Discovery Green, and this is intended to be an annual event. This will be the first of it, so let's make it a success. Then we'll do it again next year. April 28th. Michael Clare is coming to town, author of many, many books about geopolitics, petroleum, a book called Blood and Oil, which there's going to be a movie of on April 28th. Michael Clare is going to be speaking at the University of St. Thomas in Montrose. I will be introducing him in the Scanlon Room of the Jerebeck Center. Athletic Center. For more information on this event, www.hpjc.org, or you can call 281-414-1386. That event is sponsored by the Houston Peace and Justice Center. The Social Justice Committee at University of St. Thomas, Rice University for Peace, Veterans for Peace, and Oil Patch Democrats. Should be a great event. The following day, Michael Clare will be here on April 29th, Wednesday, for a showing of the movie Blood and Oil. And at 8 p.m., after the showing of the movie, Michael Clare and Matthew Simmons, who is a world-renowned expert on petroleum issues, will be discussing, well, we'll be discussing oil. That's going to be at the Rice Cinema, located on the Rice University campus right there at entrance number 8. So, great job to bring Michael Clare, one of the great authorities, and certainly a source of inspiration to me in thinking about the influence of petroleum and the cost of petroleum, the real cost of petroleum, on our economy. 713-526-5738. Again, want to thank Richard Rhodes, the great nuclear historian, for being on last week. It was a great show, just an amazing show, and he made it that way. A great guest. You can listen to it if you missed it. 1 hour talking with America's great nuclear historian about the past, present, and future of nuclear weapons. Richard Rhodes believes that we are on the cusp of very, very significant, meaningful, extraordinary reductions in nuclear stockpiles. His numbers, he thought that we might see President Obama announce any day 10,000 warheads going down to 1,000. Still 1,000 too many, but look, we'll take it. And as always, you can get replays of any of our shows at newcapitalshow.com, and you can sign up for our podcasts. You can get the show automatically to your iPhone by going to iTunes or to newcapitalshow.com. We'll be taking your calls to see what's on your mind, 713-526-5738. What's on my mind, because I had a 4-hour Passover Seder at my parents' last night. I mean, they just go on and on. And lots of small kids, and, you know, they're tired by 8 o'clock, and they're crawling under the tables. And it's just a real ethnic but beautiful ceremony. Of course, the Christian Last Supper, the Christ Last Supper, was a Seder. And so as I sat there and kind of listened to the liturgies, we went around the table and thought about different things. I tuned into the Seder prayer book and the story of the Exodus, and tried to think deeply about it and come up with, you know, what was pertinent. And I came to focus on the word bondage. Bondage. You know, because that's what the tale of Passover is about. It's about the freeing of a people from bondage. Freeing themselves, being freed. Moses freed them, God freed them. I don't know, these are all questions. What is the process? And so I began to think about that. A question of bondage. And the different forms of bondage. Voluntary bondage, something that we willingly submit to. Involuntary, something that we simply don't have the strength to resist. Self-inflicted bondage, things that we put upon ourselves from within, where it's within our power, and probably only within our power, to remove that type of bondage. And yet, though the solution seems so close at hand, there it is within us, we refuse to take the step to do it. I thought about our radio station, which really is an effort in so many ways to help people free themselves from bondage and to help free others from bondage through the bringing of information, through activism, through the willingness to go against the grain of power systems. That is the experiment and the effort many times a day, if not all day long, that KPFT is engaged in. Pacifica, public radio, the effort to break out of certain forms of bondage. I thought about the very word bond itself, so much in the news these days. And especially on this show where we talk about financial issues. What is the word we use to describe the indebtedness of one to another? What is the financial instrument that we, what do we call the financial instrument that represents the indebtedness of one entity to another? It's a bond. It's called a bond. And in that bond, one entity represents I owe you. I am indebted to you. And thereby, you have power over me. And it's spelled out in the contract of a bond. What is the power? If you don't pay me, I can take collateral. If you don't pay me on time, I can shut down the contract and call for its termination immediately. That's called default. And so as I sat there at the Passover Seder last night in this wonderful, joyous springtime of year, celebrating the rebirth of the earth, of course, in olden times, coming through the winter, was a big deal. Wasn't always that food stocks would last through the winter, and there were hungry months. February, March, probably a very hungry month, the time when the food stocks are low and things haven't yet started growing. And yet we have these beautiful spring festivals, Easter this weekend. And in this case, the Jewish Seder, the focus and the recognition, the analysis, the retelling of the story of the freeing of a people from bondage. And despite the very difficult economic times that our country is experiencing, I believe that we are fundamentally in the process of freeing ourselves from forms of bondage that have persisted for various reasons, history, power structures, but that we are fundamentally engaged on a daily basis of renewing the promise of a political entity that I believe continues to bear promise, but that it can only be done through the process of freeing ourselves from forms of bondage, most of them in our own minds. The bondage of believing that we need more than we really need. The bondage of consuming more than we need. The bondage of chasing and running after money with no goal in particular, but just to have more. The belief that the size and the amount of things that we have accounts for the worth that we believe ourselves to have, all these are things that are bondage. And there is not much good behavior and good result that comes from self-inflicted bondage. The U.S. economy is in the midst of a realignment as people realize it is important to save, which was, in fact, the message that Joseph gave to Pharaoh. And that was the thing that originally delivered the Jews into bondage in Egypt. We have to remember was the dispelling of wisdom. What a paradox, what an irony. Remember, Joseph was sold into slavery, interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, told Pharaoh that there would be 7 fat years and 7 lean years. And ultimately, a Jewish population grew and came to be enslaved. The world is unpredictable. Bondage comes about in strange and twisted ways until it ultimately becomes critical to recognize the bondage that we're in and to get out of it. So at this time of year, as Jews worldwide, and there'll be a second Seder tonight, there's always two nights in a row, two Seders. The word Seder means order. And I think this revolves around the way that the story is told, the order in which it's told around the dinner table. I encourage everybody to think about their own forms of bondage and to think about the bondage that others are held in as well. And to do what you can do and more to free yourselves and free others from a state of bondage in order to make a better and just world. 713-526-5738 is the number, 713-526-KPFT. Let's get straight to the phones. Gary, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo.
What's on your mind?
Hope you can hear me okay. I guess relating to your theme of bondage, energy bondage, I wanted to ask your advice, and maybe even, I'm sure you've even probably had some shows on this, if you could even point me to a show. My girlfriend and I are interested in looking into solar panels and or home wind generators. We looked online, but it was hard to separate the hype from the real products, and I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of point us in the right direction, maybe some sites or some resources so that we can evaluate them and figure out what would work the best for us.
Gary, let me say, you live in Houston?
In Houston,
okay.
Yeah. I know you have power, solar power on your home, right?
I don't have solar power in my home in Houston. I own some ranch land 90 miles west of Houston where it is all powered off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal experience is that I think solar power here would be worth it, but wind power I do not think is at a point, just because of the part of the country that we live in is not highly rated for wind. And there's an awful lot of work going on in wind turbines. I have a wind turbine at my ranch, and I've been disappointed by the amount of wind that I generate there, and I'm in a pretty high up spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm getting that result there, then I would say that deep here in the city of Houston, down on the flatlands, close to the, not on the coast, you know, we're 50 miles inland, where the winds are going to be even more muted, that wind here is not, in my opinion, going to be a big deal, but solar is. And
mm-hmm.
So I would direct you to, until we start to see wind turbines that are small and highly efficient and can produce wind in very low wind currents, then I don't think wind is going to be that viable here in Houston, but solar is and will be. And so I would say that's the direction that you should be looking in, is solar. And the federal government will help out with that. You can take a tax deduction for any solar improvements that you put into your house. And in fact, this year there's going to be expansion in the tax code as a result, I think, of the stimulus, which is going to allow for additional tax breaks for weatherizing your home, upgrading the air conditioning, and things like that. So the government's starting to get with it, and they're starting to create financial incentives. Does that help?
That helps, but do you have any specific, like, websites or associations that we could turn to so that we could really get good information and evaluate the best companies and the best way to set up a solar assembly for our particular situation?
I've worked with Gary. Send me an email. I've worked with a couple of vendors at my place out west, and I would be happy to give you their names. There are definitely associations here in Houston. Why don't you send me an email and I'll get you. I've got a list on another page, but I just can't put my fingers on it right now. But there are a number of nonprofits working in this area. The city of Houston, I think, can probably provide some information as well. The group there has been doing some work. So if you would send me an email, I will get you what I have on all of these areas, and we'll put you in touch with some people who can begin to work with you.
Okay, that'd be great. So I can get that email off of the KPFT website?
Just go to newcapitalshow.com, and you can send it straight to me, and I'll send you what I got.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great to have you. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Kusu is up next. Kusu, yes. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Yes, Leo, thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
You know, I'm just very worried about your story about this bondage.
Yeah.
Because you need to go back to Egypt, go to the Temple of Teti in Egypt. They might not tell you I'm not telling you the Arabs now live there. Those people living in Egypt are Arabs. Your original Egyptians are the dark Africans who are still living there. Mm. Who are not there, some of them are in Sudan. They might not tell you the true story of that about the Jews being held bondage. Nobody held the Jews. The Jews are the ones who held us for 200 years in bondage. The story they told you, go back to the Temple of Teti. You see, you know, when we tried to kick out the Jews, we tried to kick them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they got caught. They lie, keep work. The people keep continue to lie about this bondage that Ramsey said he was the one who wrote, Asu Mahara, Rasetu Ra, I'm the chosen son of God. But you guys flip the story and claim that you are the chosen son of God. That is not true. I would appreciate you to stop promoting this lie because it's so bad. That's the reason why people are so confused about these Jews people. Go back to Temple of Teti in Egypt. They might tell you, the real indigenous, they might tell you, but they might not even tell you. If you're lucky, they might tell you. But I'm telling you right now, the real truth of this story.
Kusu, you're carrying around some bondage, I would say.
I'm carrying it because I'm carrying it with the lies that people have been giving me in the Bible or everything. Are you coming here to promote the whole thing? I don't like it. It just makes me upset.
But Kusu, when we're in bondage to stories that are thousands of years old, when we're in bondage to paths of history that are passed down to us that have been twisted and distorted, and we put all of our being into determining that they are absolutely inviolable and correct.
Well, there were five rabbis who wrote that stuff in the Bible, five of them.
Yeah.
And some of those you know where the word carcass came from? They came from Carcass Mountain, Caucasian. That's why that word comes, carcass. That's carcass. They came from Carcass Mountain. They are Caucasian. They are called Ashkenaz Jews from eastern part of Russia, which is called Georgia today. That's where they came from.
Yeah.
People, when they come back here, it's Ashkenaz Jews.
Well, we all come from somewhere, Kusu.
Yeah, so, I mean, this lies. You said, no, look at what is happening to the Palestine today. It's not fair.
Yeah.
Everybody's afraid to say something to them. This is not, they start up the same thing they do all over the world. It's not good.
Yeah. Well, listen.
Thank you, man.
It's great to have you on. Thanks. You know, it's just stories, folks. And in order to go forward, we remember our histories. We want to take the best of it. We want to take the learning from it. In particular, we want to be able to take the lessons that allow us to empathize with the present, empathize with the future, and to work with others cooperatively to make sure that the world is free of bondage. And, you know, I think Kusu makes a very good example of why it's really, really important to free ourselves of those things in order to move forward. And I'm grateful for his call. Next up, let's take Susan on line three. Number here, 713-526-5738. We're talking about bondage. Susan, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo. I think you're absolutely right about bondage. It's a big question. And one of the questions that I had is, do you think that the more enlightened religious leaders around the world are failing us in terms of not trying to dispel the distortions of the past? It seems to me that religious issues are dominating world events in a big way these days. They always have, but they seem to have come back into the fore. And I wonder why we're not getting more enlightenment, whether, for instance, we should even have in our schools some basic requirements for studies of the more meaningful and spiritual aspects that would counteract all the materialism and consumerism in our culture.
Susan, there are things being said by religious leaders that continue to be problematic, and there's an awful lot of bright positive things developing in if you're asking me about that community and that group. And my own personal experience is that there are some amazing, powerful, fantastic spiritual religious leaders operating, young ones coming up, who are part of our times and who hold extraordinary promise for transformation and release of their congregants from bondage, especially the personal bondage that so many of us carry around. And it is it's great that you are mentioning this community, because they are critical, crucial leaders. And some of it involves laying aside tradition and laying aside historical dogma, but some of it is also about reconnecting with it and making it pertinent and making it significant and meaningful to new generations, whether that's on an allegorical basis or because what we're talking about here is story. I mean, that's why I began today talking about the story of the Passover, because it's a story. It's why the Seder has oftentimes an appeal to young children because of the rituals, and it's a story. And stories are how we tell things. They're the most effective way. It's one thing for me to just say a sentence of dogma. It approaches you, and then it falls probably short of it. But if I tell a story, then information gets communicated. And so I think that we have very, very adept religious leaders. I was thinking about Joel Osteen yesterday as I drove past the Lakewood Church, and I thought, wow, this is a person who has extraordinary, unparalleled capability to communicate with people and to help them transform themselves. And whether he's working through a Christian tradition, which he is, of a Pentecostalist flavor, which I think he is, that's not what's relevant to me. What's relevant to me is he helping, and as I was thinking about bondage yesterday, is he helping free the world from its bondage? And if the answer is yes, then we must have these religious leaders. That's a long-winded answer, but is that helpful?
Well, it does help me a bit. It's just, I wonder, you know, we're at a crossroads now politically where everybody's so frightened that Obama has socialistic tendencies.
Not everybody is so frightened.
But, well, a lot of people are, and I think that one of the things that has gotten us into this awful bind is this tremendous sense of entitlement and materialism, lack of saving and consumerism that you touched upon earlier. And while I think that, basic Jeffersonian capitalism, with a small C, is probably as good a system as any that our world has seen, I think that this business of, you're going to make out better if you're a good person, you're going to have a bigger house, if you're a great person, you're going to have, more things if you're a good person, is kind of taken over our society a lot. And unfortunately, we've gotten away from, our parents' and grandparents' generation, which was more frugal and more attendant to the social and communitarian needs of the family and that sort of thing. And I'm just wondering how we ever get back to that, because I think it's so crucial that we do.
We just do. That's what we do. We get back to it. Susan, thanks. Great to have you. We just do. We are of our times. Everyone is of their times. George Soros, the legendary investor today, says Americans were living in a fool's paradise that is gone forever. I haven't read the article, but I assume what Soros is saying is that the voluntary lending of large, massive amounts of capital by the rest of the world to fuel American consumption, that's over. And if you think about that transaction that has occurred, the lending of vast amounts of money to Americans to fuel their consumption, that is a form of bondage. And Americans became addicted to that form of bondage. And I believe, I don't recall, I'm trying to think back to my religious school days, but I think that there was much rabbinic commentary in the Talmud on the state of the Israelites in Egypt that suggests that, in fact, much of that bondage was self-imposed. And that the figure of Moses and that the Exodus itself was allegorical more than anything else. That it wasn't a God who commanded Pharaoh to let the Jews go or a Moses who led them. It was them who said it's time to go. And you get large groups of people. Not everyone is going to say it's time to go when it's time to go. And there are going to be those who say Obama's a socialist. Who cares what that word means? You know, we face a set of issues and problems. Every one of us does every single day. Crisis is never ending. Don't think this crisis ends and that's end of crisis. The existence of the world lies between stasis and crisis, change and steadiness. That will never change. The financial crisis that's upon us right now was with us 10 years ago. It was with us 50 years ago. It will be with us 50 years from now. It has no start and no end. We're just noticing it more now. And our job as people is to free ourselves from bondage as best as we can and change. Next up, let's take Rakesh. Welcome to the New Capital Show, Rakesh.
Hi. First of all, a really great observation on bondages, and whatever you said today make all the sense in the world. Let me say that.
Thank you.
Second thing, I want to share my personal experience regarding self-exploration and on similar lines of a lot of things that you are saying. One thing, okay, bondage, good, bad. Most of the time it's bad to have bondage now, but how do we get rid of it? I mean, how do we say, okay, no bondage, that's period. Second thing, like, let me give you a very small basic example. Like, we listen to everyone, don't eat animals for food, don't treat them food, okay. But no one says, well, how do we stop that? They just say, okay, stop it, don't eat animals, that's bad. The problem here is we forget the basic of what is happening, and we just try to concentrate on the end result of what is bad and what is good. Now, eating animals is bad, but what do I do about the craving that arises inside me for that particular food, for any food for that matter. Now, I eat fish or I eat crawfish or, say, a crab, and it tastes so good. My mind is convinced that it tastes so good. But then I go to a philosophical lecture from some vegetarian society, and they tell me how it is absolutely bad to eat animals. Now, I convince my mind, okay, dude, it's bad to eat animals, no more eating animals. But then I am miserable because my mind and my body is already used to that feeling of eating, of having a very nice taste. So no one is exploring that area where you have to somehow kill, not kill exactly, but get rid, or you have to work on that particular craving or that sensation or that feeling. Now, the experience that I want to share with you guys is that recently, that is on February, I did a course in meditation, and that was in Kaufman, Texas. And they exactly work on this. It's a non-sectarian, it's a non-religious a course. But what they do is they tell you the link between the feelings that you get, the sensations that you get, the bondages, the cravings. And they tell you that how it is exactly linked to your mind and body. And all you have to do is you have to detach that link. And they give you a very scientific mechanism and a way to work with yourself, with your mind, with your body, and detach that link. And once that link is detached, you understand that, okay, this animal is for food, and you can either eat it or you cannot eat it. But now you don't have that craving, so you have an option whether you want to eat it or not. Now then your intellectual mind says, okay, it's bad to kill animal. Then your body and your mind and your soul naturally resist
So Rakesh, so you're finding great value in this work that you did.
It was just a course, but I like the idea of the entirety of that particular technique in which they tell you from end to end, like actually connecting to your body. Because I had done a lot of things before, and most of them give you a lot of philosophical talks and a lot of teachings of what is good and what is bad. At the end of the day, as we grow up, I mean, we all understand, okay, this is good, this is bad. But how to bring that in your real life without getting miserable and without losing a lot of values and a lot of things that you like in your life. So that is one thing I just wanted to bring up.
Great, and thank you for your call.
Okay, great. Thanks.
The idea of meditation is to just stop. We just stop. Some of you are driving cars right now. Some of you are sitting at work. Some of you are listening on radio. Some of you are listening on computers. Some of you are in Houston, Texas. Most of you. Some of you are elsewhere. Some of you are listening live. Some of you are listening by replay, or will be. But the idea of meditation, as Rakesh mentions, is, you know, we just stop. And that is the first place of freeing oneself from bondage, I think. It's what I've learned. You have to just stop first. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to run from. There's nothing to solve. The first step is you just stop. Whoa. You Jews are promoting that you're the chosen people, and it's not right because the Ethiopians were there first and we were put into bondage and Ramses didn't let, you know, whatever. Wait. We just stop is first. We stop. Have to stop. And one of the problems in our society is that it's gotten going so fast by virtue of the technological advancements that have occurred, the flow of information, that I think that one of the things that's gotten us into our current problems is that people have been overrun by the information. It's coming at them so fast and so furious, they don't just stop. They sign the deal to take on additional debt on their house. They got to get this, they got to get that. Everybody else is getting the big house, got to get the big house. And suddenly, had they just stopped somewhere and said, wait a minute, let me take 60 seconds and survey my assumptions. My friend has a 5,000 square foot house. Does that mean I need one? My friend is spending everything they have on stuff and not saving anything for their retirement. Does that mean I should? My friend believes blacks have caused everything wrong in this country and is causing it to go down the dumpers. Should I think that? My friend thinks everything Rush Limbaugh says is correct. Should I? You notice I'm not overruling the possibility that those things are correct, but the first step is to free oneself from the bondage of that of a thought train is to just stop. To create the space for an alternative possibility or reality. And I think many Americans are undergoing that process right now. Some happily and gleefully, some begrudgingly and unwillingly, some painfully, some without much problem whatsoever. Everybody is where they are. That's okay. That's how it is. It's supposed to be that way. There's nowhere else we could be than where we are. If you're not where you are, where would you be? So everybody comes to the process of freedom from bondage where they are. And I'm good with the way it's going down. That doesn't mean the TARP is perfect or Geithner is the ideal Treasury Secretary, or Obama's made every decision right, or alternative energy is coming fast enough, or all the corporations are out of the lobbying business. No. I got it. No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I'm pretty good with the way it's going down right now. I'm seeing lots of good change and good freeing from bondage. And that's pleasing. Next up, let's take Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Leo. Long time no hear, man. You've been dodging me in favor of the ditto heads or something.
We try to mix it up here, Rick. Let's say that. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, you know, it's almost hard to scold you after the whole thing about it's just a story because you were dead spot on. I mean, it's if you can take religion a little less seriously, then everybody will be better off. Just take it for what it's worth. You know, a lot of it's, you know, anecdotal stories. A lot of it's just good little stories to tell. A lot of it has moral points that if you go for the literal meanings of it, you miss the point.
If it helps you, if it helps free you from bondage and helps free others from bondage, then, and I mean real bondage, then it's got value. It's not for me to say this. Yeah, go ahead.
On like if you know Noah really had the boat in the flood and all that, you missed the point. You know, which is do what you think is right and never mind what everybody says. And if you know you're on the right path, don't let anyone discourage you or tell you otherwise. You know, do your thing and most likely you'll come out ahead and be all right.
Rick, it's right on.
So, but anyway, with that having been said, I saw an interesting cartoon that came to me via email. That had Obama talking to a big crowd of people, and he was saying, you know, I promise to guarantee for you transportation, housing, health care, food, you know, whatever, whatever, and jobs. And this guy raised his hand and said, why do we need the jobs?
So,
I thought that was pretty funny, and, you know, I'll leave you with that.
Thanks, Rick. You know, it's fine to support President Barack Obama. But, you know, your support should not be a support of bondage. It should be a strong, principled support, as it should be of anything that you support. But your disagreement should be principled as well. And shouldn't be in bondage either. And really for a long time, I think I've seen too much disagreement that has been a disagreement of bondage rather than a disagreement of principle. And those who have stated disagreement have it's been beyond their power. They've believed that they're operating out of disagreement on principle. But you know, when you see the wild look in the eyes, that's kind of the giveaway. Just wildness, and you say, no, that's not principle, that's bondage. You're speaking from bondage. We got about 15 minutes left. Tony is up next. 713-526-5738 is the number. This is the New Capital Show. www.newcapitalshow.com. Tony, welcome.
Hi, I just wanted to make a brief comment. I am down on Galveston Island, and we get a good amount of breeze here all the time, and possibly wind turbines might be a lot better down here than they would be 50 miles inland.
Oh, I think there's no question, Tony. No question that wind on Galveston would certainly be a whole other prospect than here in Houston.
Right, right. Another thing was when I was at the unemployment office about 3-4 weeks ago, a lady that I met working there said that she had gone over to Israel to travel with her sister, and that every single rooftop in Israel has solar panels on
the
roof.
It's absolutely true. All the hot water, I think, is heated by solar. Of course, that Israel does not have petroleum resources really at all, and so and I don't think any coal resources either. And so how the country gets its energy is obviously a critical issue. And being that they are essentially at war with petroleum producing countries next to it, has forced them to innovate. You know. So necessity is the mother of invention, and that is correct. I think, you know, almost every home, I don't know what the numbers are, solar panels are certainly providing for the hot water, and I think increasingly are providing for electrical needs there as well. That's correct.
I just hope we get pushed forward, because it would be a new industry for us to...
It sure would. We're going to get there, Tony. There's a lot going on there. Thanks for the call.
All right. You're welcome.
Of course, they got a lot of sun there, too. Lots of sun there as well. But we have a lot of sun in Texas. And Texas will be a leader in solar. There's no question about it. We'll be on our way. We are on our way. Things are happening. And be hopeful. And if you're out looking for work and you want to find work in a new area, don't think that solar's not going to happen. Go look into it. If you're young and you want to be in a business that's going to do well in the future, I can tell you solar is going to be there. And so don't let this downturn in the economy make you think that it's all over. I mean, I hear, I got clients who bring this concern to me. You know, it's all over. You know, look, it's not all over. In 1945, the world finished with a war, and, you know, half the countries of the earth had been flattened. We're not there. And we are dealing with problems. And the future is bright. The future is very bright. It's bright for this country, and it's bright for many, many countries. And the future is, we'll have competition, but it's going to have a lot of cooperation, too. These are good times. They're hard times, but they're good times. Max, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I like your show.
Thank you.
I've been pondering a question, and I'm curious to know. I think I've found my answer, although it puts you on the horns of a dilemma. But I'm curious to know what your answer to the question would be. Are the chosen people?
I'm sorry, with the what?
Who are the chosen people? What people is chosen?
What people are the chosen people?
Yes.
Max, who are the chosen people?
All of them.
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it does put you in a dilemma.
Why? Why is that?
In that. If we're all chosen, then
you have to give up. You have to give some things up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a lot of those things are issues of feelings and emotions related to bondage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense in which we need to feel unique for ego purposes and for self-worth, self-esteem. But if we carry that too far, righteously carry it too far, I guess it's a question maybe of moderation. If we carry it too far, then we put ourselves in the well, I'm more chosen than you are.
Max, thank you.
Okay, bye.
You know, the first choice everyone should make is to choose themselves. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. I mean that in an open way. To choose other things, you must first really choose yourself. And I find myself, when I'm in bad patterns of behavior, and I frequently am, and I'm not proud of that, and I work on that. But what I notice when I kind of take a step back and take that stop, what I notice is that in those moments, most I'm not choosing myself. And I think Max is exactly right, that a better world results when we all are chosen, and specifically when we all have chosen ourselves in an open, accepting way. Let's take Charles next. Charles, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo. A couple of years ago, I was at Covenant Church, and they mentioned something interesting. They said that Moses started the first labor movement, basically going up to the Pharaoh with an organized group of laborers and saying, you know, we demand a day off,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to go out into the wilderness and to separate ourselves from, you know, from all the material obsessions for a while.
That sounds right. I think the themes of the themes and the stories of the Bible are applicable in modern times, and the yearning and the aspiration. I mean, that is the story of the Seder, Charles. The yearnings and the aspirations of thousands of years ago continue today, and we hear this on this radio station every day as we express the yearnings and the aspirations and the hopes, the dreams, the pleasures, the pains of people worldwide. And I think it's entirely, and this was really Rick's point, it's entirely appropriate to look at those stories in order to reconnect with the sweep of humanity and to realize that things that we fight for today and hope for today didn't just crop up today, and therefore political resistance to them is not the be-all and the end-all. That there are long histories of these stories of people, of humans, of animals, of Earth.
The oppression of us too continues, you know, as long as we are encouraged to see each other as a threat to our survival. I mean, that the people end up shooting, you know, getting the guns and going on these rampages. They're paranoid, and I think it's a pathological byproduct of too much emphasis on competition. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, put in some emphasis on cooperation, not see each other as a threat to our survival, but see each other as a key to our survival.
Charles, right on. Great to have you. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
David Brooks of the New York Times had a very popular piece of a day or two ago called The End of Philosophy, in which he discusses the vital evolutionary importance of humans cooperating. That there's a tendency in modern economic theory to look at economic entities as maximizing their interests through competition. But that in an evolutionary basis, humans have always been extremely cooperative. And I would like to see us enter into greater and greater elements of cooperation. You know, You can't bring anything off yourself. What can you do by yourself? Nothing. No, I mean, if you were just dropped on the earth, just you, there's nothing you can do. Martin Luther King had it exactly right. I don't remember the speech he gave, but it's, you know, he said he wakes up in the morning and before he's even walked out the door, he's eaten the food that someone else has provided to him and showered using water that's coming to him through systems that were put in by other people and invented by others. My gosh. Competition, we are cooperative people. We wouldn't have gotten where we are in terms of our planetary dominance without sense of cooperation, and we need to reestablish that in order to solve our problems. Let's take Jay on line 6. Jay, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. I've listened to the show a few times, but my question is this: I got a video forwarded to me by a friend, a girl, pretty smart girl. She goes to school in Berkeley. And it's called the Obama Deception, and it refers to it's not really a negative video about Obama, but it's more about the powerful elite control the masses and the leaders of countries. And even if Obama intends to do well, ultimately he will do what these elite want them to do.
Jay, thanks.
What are your thoughts on that?
These are tactical questions. A new leader comes in, and we are where we are. Let me get back to that place of talking about we are where we are. We have elites. We've got interests that are built up, that have resources and capital, and they're going to do what they do, and there's going to be opposition to them. Obama is one player on the stage. The stage is big, it's wide, it's huge, he has a certain set number of avenues and alleyways that he can approach problems with, and it was the same thing when George W. Bush was the president and Richard Nixon was the president. You know, this is politics. Talking about stories, go back to and read the classics. Read the Romans. This is what politics is. It's the roads that are chosen by individuals who were placed in positions of power to make choices. And a film is just a film. And it's no great surprise to me that Obama is going to be beholden. I don't want to say be beholden, but is going to have to take account of certain interests and is going to have to compete with them, but also cooperate with them in order to make change. But ultimately, I find that I sense that he's a thinking person who has an interest in succeeding, and he defines success as progress, not as total, utter, complete nirvana transformation of the United States into the ideal that he holds in his head and would like to see, but can he make progress? Hopefully we made some today. Earth Day Houston this weekend. Please come out, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Discovery Green, downtown. www.newcapitalshow.com is our address. I hope you have a great week. I hope you have a great, if you celebrate Easter, great Easter. You celebrate Passover, whatever you celebrate. Until next week, take care. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bob.
Join the Big Read Texas, April 17th through May 31st, as your neighbors and friends throughout the greater Houston metro area read the classic American novel To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Log on to www.bigreadtexas.org for the latest information on book discussions and special appearances by actress Mary Badham, Scout in the film, and Harper Lee's biographer, Charles Shields. This event is being coordinated by the Harris County Public Library. For more information, call 713-749-9000. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
high school seniors, the Tagore Society of Houston is accepting entries for its $1,000 scholarship essay contest. Applicants are to write an essay of 1,000 words based on a quote by inspirational Indian poet, philosopher, and Nobel laureate Rabindranath Tagore. Essays will be judged by an elite panel of local authors. All entries must be received electronically by May 8th. Students are encouraged to visit our website at www.tagoresociety.org for instructions. That's www.tagoresoc.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.